Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, we will take a journey down the road, understanding the phenomena of policing in the United States. We are seeing the calling for this action as a means and a solution to fighting and stopping crime in urban and underserved communities where there are people of color. As outcry to this call to action, we are witness today in the 21st century where one person of color is killed every 8 hours. The community that is to be protected by official police officers, they are the most afraid of their protectors. The rise of a philosophy to shoot and kill first and lie by your efforts to terrorize and arrest at all costs, and to search and seize the youth of the day has become the law of the land for life of inner city youth. Yet with this recognized reality, many are still calling for more policing only within these communities. What have we gone wrong in policing the United States of America? What was the origin and intentions for the development of creating a police organized apparatus to secure an order, to control poor and the uneducated? We will continue this discussion as a second part of a four-part series relating to the history of policing in the United States, part two. We have with us today a senior consultant, Emmanuel Adjorno. He will share his research and knowledge on the subject. As a continuation, one of the things, Emmanuel, we'd like to first welcome you to Mr. Pace of History.
Thank you.
In terms of this continuation, Emmanuel, of the subject of policing in the United States, the history of policing in the United States, can you talk about what happens when the politicians begin to get involved and start controlling this force that we call the police? What has the history and the struggle been when the politicians start getting involved in an organized capacity?
Well, first of all, there should be no surprise that the police were under the control of local politicians. What happened there was that the influence of the police department and the party voters, they became inconceivable. That was police department, basically. They began to get corrupt very quickly. Police systematically took payoffs to allow illegal drinking, gambling, prostitution. This is the end of the 18th century. They organized professionals, bringing up to speed. They organized professional criminals, thieves, pickpockets, etc. Trading immunity for bribes, for information. The activity was involved in and participated in vote buying and ballot box stuffing. Lawyer political operatives became police officers. I'm going to repeat that. Loyal political operatives became police officers. They had no discernible qualifications for policing and little, if any, type of training for policing. Promotions within police department, they were sold. I'll get more involved in that later on in my presentation. Not earned. I'm going to repeat that. Promotion with the police department were sold, not earned. Police They drink while on duty. You see it in movies today. You see them at the bar drinking. Things they're supposed to be controlling, they're doing themselves. Got into their car, definitely DUI, but that don't count. What they did not count at all. They protected the patron's vice operation. So they protected the prostitution, the gambling, and the speakeasies, you might call them clubs. And they were quick to use force. Municipal police, you might say slash, delegated vigilantes, entrusted with the power to use overwhelming force, police brutality, what they do today, against the dangerous classes. And who were the dangerous classes? They were basically poverty-stricken, poor minorities, as deterring criminality. Now, the by the end of the 19th century, I'm going to move you to the 19th century, the police departments were firmly entrenched in the day-to-day political affairs of big city political machines. Everybody knows about the political machines during that particular time in the larger cities. Police provided services and assistance to political allies of that machine or that party. They harassed people, they arrested them, interfered with the political activities of machine opponents. That happened all of the time. The biggest thing of the political machines in the turn of the century were, in fact, the primary modality through which crime was organized in urban areas. They organized, because the suburbs are not really out there that much. It was in urban areas where you know who was there. In urban areas, right away. The politicians, they supervised gambling, prostitution, and drug distribution. And racketeering. I think all of us are familiar with that. In fact, organized crime dominated political parties of American cities. So your larger cities, they dominated these cities with organized crime, racketeering, prostitution, gambling, and distribution of drugs. And in some cases, we're talking about that particular type of many white youth gangs. And of course, they roamed the large cities and they were intimidating instruments to businessmen. To operate a business, you have to pay. And the police, again, they were operatives and made sure nothing happened to these gangs. To get the vote they needed necessary, the same thing happened there. They extorted political contributions. Make sure you paid up to do this. This is the history of policing and the U.S. of A. They made movies about it. You've seen quite a few movies about it. Not ashamed of it. They tell you what they do. They look at you looking what they do. So it's all there. Local businessmen, they paid to operate business sometime. Let's go to the dawn of the 20th century. Police were at least de facto acting as the enforcement arm of organized crime in virtually every city. They ran that to make sure that the vice operations of these cities were controlled by the party-to-be. Widespread election fraud happened, and they played a big role as political functionaries. For the machine, in return, the police had virtually carte blanche in the use of force, just like today. They have carte blanche and the use of force. Then they lie about it. They lied. You see, they have cameras down to show what they do, and they still stand there and lie. It's in their DNA to protect and protect their own. Crime control, solicitation, and acceptance of bribes. This was the norm. They getting paid. Early 20th century, police were corrupt, big time corruption. They were in fact the primary instruments for the creation of corruption in the first place.
What do you contribute to the behavior and the role of these forces when it came to the era that they call Prohibition era, 1919-1935? What took place then? How did they behave? How were they involved in this time period?
Well, the advent of Prohibition mainly went from 1919, you was close there, 1933, could spill over to 35, only made the situation worse. The outlawing of alcohol combined with the fact that the overwhelming majority of urban residents, they drank, and they want to continue to drink, not only created new opportunities for police corruption, but essentially changed the focus of that corruption. Where today, let's fast forward, they write tickets, traffic tickets for little small things. This is the corruption today. Is to write tickets in the inner city, the urban areas. Make sure they're sitting outside of your nightclubs or your bars or your speakeasy, and don't sit outside the white restaurants where they have bars and everything else. They're not sitting out there. Get all the DUIs they want. No, they want to go to a poor neighborhood and do it. This is what they do. They focus on minorities, basically African Americans. This is where they're parked. Go to traffic court, you'll see who's in there. Go to DUI courts, you want to call them, that's what they are, most of them are DUI courts, I call them. They're there, and who includes there? 80-90% African Americans. We do way less drinking than they ever going to do. But like I say again, the fact everything is on urban residents. It was a new opportunity for police corruption. But that changed the focus of that corruption. So the focus now has changed in the traffic courts. And you see who's there. Most of the revenue of African American cities, that is basically 70%, 65%, 80-90% of the tickets are written against them. But they're on the police forces, basically male white. Over 90% is male white. It's all about who you can control and keep it up on the table. Corruption, you want to make sure it stays there and make sure you get paid for your corruption. So during Prohibition, lawlessness became more open. They didn't care. They don't care now. They don't care about beating somebody. You know, when they've got their hands behind the back on the ground, they're still gonna beat them. It's just the way it is. It's more open now. More organized and more blatant. Don't care. Your major cities that prosper in this is New York, Chicago. They have more than 25,000 speakeasies or clubs. And they got bars inside of these restaurants. But again, it's important for policing to make sure that they don't deal with that too much. They go where African Americans are, where the poor, are, or you call the questionable people, So prohibition changed how corruption was organized. Criminal syndicates set up to deliver alcohol to all those illegal outlets. That acquired an enormous sum of money, political power. So to do this, during the moonshine era, you might say during the Al Capone years, what we're talking about, they made movies about him, of course, and Elliot Ness and the rest of them, had so corrupt in trying to stop them doing what they were doing. No longer depend on the machine. They didn't need the machine anymore. It gave them respect, but they didn't need the machines anymore. Organized crime was able to emerge from the shadow and deal directly with corrupt police departments. Didn't need the politicals anymore. No, we're going to deal with this way. Organized crime was able to emerge from the shadows and deal directly with corrupt police in many cities. But the police became little more than watchmen for organized crime enterprises, or on a more sinister vein, enforcement squads to harass the competition of the syndicate paying the corruption bill. So, want to get this nightclub out of business, you go in and do some things that's crazy. You always, again, you raid them for corruption. Any competition, this is what they were paid to do. They were called enforcement squads. And by the end of Prohibition, the corruption of policing was almost total. I'm going to repeat that again. The corrupting of American policing was almost total. What happened after that? Municipal police departments. And so in years later, an elder brought cries for reform. A reform? Initially, reform efforts took the form of investigative commissions, looking into both police and political corruption. Commissions started. They were formed to respond to specific acts of outrageous conduct by the police. Commissions got formed because the police departments were corrupt, and they are corrupt today. With the DA, the grand juries, all this, all corrupt. When you try to prosecute a police officer, even though he's guilty, we're going to find him not guilty by some way or means. So we form our own grand jury, and they're all going to get what they need to get to make sure that you basically put a vendetta against the victim, any kind of negative vendetta against the victim. These commissions, they invest specific incidents. Widespread corruption, misfeasance, and also malfeasance. Well, what are some of these investigation bodies? What did they do? Well, they brought information on prostitution syndicate by Los Angeles Mayor Arthur Harper. They got the police chief, Edward Kearns, organized crime figure. He's police chief now, but he's an organized crime figure. Combined with subsequent instructions to the police to harass the syndicate's competitors in prostitution industry. The assassination of organized crime figures, well, that happened a lot. And who was doing the killing? I think we know. Also, let's talk a little bit about who controlled the rival gambling syndicates and used loyal faculty and police to harass the other ones who were coming in competition. This is amazing, but this is the history of our police department. This is what we have now, coming from the embryo of what happened from the beginning. Well, let's go to one of the earliest commissions. Let's go to the Lenox Committee, formed in 1894 to investigate police corruption. 1894. And that involved gambling, prostitution, and to be investigate police extortion. Well, let's check on the promotions and the police to find who got promoted and because of what. Well, because, again, cause of corruption. I told you I would get to this. So the department acquired a bribe. I'm going to give you some numbers here. $1,600 to be promoted to sergeant. $15,000 to be promoted to captain. This had a promotion. They were sold, not earned. I'm going to repeat those numbers to you again. $1,600 to be promoted to sergeant, and up to $15,000 to be promoted to captain. This is amazing. This is amazing to anybody. Prohibition-related corruption in 1949. The Brooklyn Grand Jury, which investigated gambling payoffs, 1972, the Knapp Commission, which looked into corruption related to gambling and drugs. And in 1993, the Mullen Commission, which exposed massive drug corruption, organized theft by police officers, excessive use of force, and use of drugs by the police. This is what we're dealing with today. This is the embryo. Apple don't fall too far from the tree. They keep it white, they keep it in male, and they keep it corrupt. They're protecting what they always protected. In Philadelphia, a series of investigative grand juries exposed massive police collaboration with gambling and prostitution enterprises. They also investigated police corruption in Louisville, San Francisco, Milwaukee, New Orleans, Indianapolis, Atlanta, and Los Angeles. So the cities that are having trouble today are the same ones had trouble then, and it's not going to change. Those same cities are corrupt. Police department going to stay corrupt. The politicians are going to stay in place. They're going to make sure of this regardless. It's just the way it is. We're going to have to deal with this. Like I said before, the police department needs to be totally reformed and dismantled the way it is. It should reflect the community. Should reflect the community that it exemplifies. Reflect the members' population. This is what it should do. You get 70% minority groups in that particular city, you'd have over 70% police force. Not 90% white, but they don't even live there. Most of them move out in the suburbs or somewhere else and getting paid. They're getting paid. Regular salary plus corruption. A lot of corruption. But again, my listening audience, understand exactly what's going on. What you see today is the same control that you saw in the 18th, 19th century and the 20th century. As we get involved more and more, you will understand that policing and the U.S. of A. will be corrupt, always been corrupt for almost 400 years, and is still being corrupt today. I don't I don't think that will change.
Emmanuel, what would we like to do for a few minutes? We'd like to stop you, sucker, and let our listening audience know that they are listening to Missing Pages of History. We're dealing with the history of policing in the United States. This is our second part of a four-part series. What we want to do right now is make a few announcements concerning some of the activities, upcoming activities for Missing Pages of History, which is on Saturday, October the 3rd at 1 p.m. on WCLM 1450 AM. We'll be hosting our third quarterly reference drawing. Our reference drawing will take place on October 3rd at 1 p.m. So for all our supporters, thank you, and friends, MPH, you still can purchase your ticket. For more information, you can call MPH at 804-726-3217, or you can go and check our website at www.mphinc.org. At the same time, we'd like to remind everyone that MPH now has a live TV program that comes on Wednesday nights from 9 to 10 p.m. on Comcast Cablevision, channel 95. Please tune in the next coming Wednesdays and watch MPH from 9 to 10 p.m. on Comcast Cablevision, channel 95. Again, as well as those activities, we also have an ongoing T-shirt and cap fundraiser drive. This drive will take place always through the end of September. If you haven't purchased your cap and your T-shirt, please do so. Do that by going to our website. MPH, appreciate your support. And like always, we are making a contribution in terms of trying to give information. We can better understand our situation at the same time to help our communities better. So please support MPH, and I'm sending your support. So remember, MPH comes on a bi-weekly basis. Our next program will be October 3rd, 1 p.m. So please go out and share that with your friend and your network. You got to listen to Missing Pages of History. Emmanuel, one of the things in terms of listening to your history of the history of police in the United States, one would be maybe confused in terms of, could you describe the difference, or if there are any difference, between political corruption and police corruption? They seem to intertwine very closely. Can you talk a little bit more about that as it relates to the role of police in the United States?
Well, they're one and the same, because, again, the police department during the machine era, they provide a variety of community services other than law enforcement. So that's what they did that particular time back, in, especially in New York and Boston. They sheltered the homeless. They kept tabs on infectious disease or epidemics. They, you know, entered the public privies. So things that they did, while this service function of police continued to be important today, it is important to recall that in the context of the political machine, government services were traded for votes and political loyalty. Understand that part of it. Again, the exchange was made. That was through solicitation, that was through acceptance of bribes, basically was crime control, just patrolling crime. It is incorrect to say that in the 19th and 20th century police were corrupt. Well, I just told you why. There's things they did that particular time. In the early 20th century when they got corrupt, really, and they got told corrupt later on. But again, the solicitation and acceptance of bribes, and that became their primary business in the 20th century. They were very corrupt. In fact, they were the primary instruments for the creation of corruption in the first place. The political machines got to them, controlling the crime. But you can do more than this. And that's what happened. They did more than that because that was the machine era. There was a Dela machine in Chicago. I can name the different machines in larger cities through the country. But everybody's familiar with that. But that's what they did, basically. In the machine area, they provide community services. Things that they did, other than law enforcement. Because soon it got organized, you got to do more than this. This is money to be made. So with bribes, you can make some money. And we'll give you virtually carte blanche in the use of force. And that's what they have today. They have carte blanche in the use of force. So that is basically a parallel of what they were doing in the 19th century, what they're doing today. But again, they're trying to control everything by zip codes to a certain extent. They patrol zip codes where African Americans are more than anything else. See, Wall Street can get it with Wall Street crimes, but you cannot get it with street crimes. They're totally different, and the sentencing laws a lot different. People call it white-collar crime. They call it blue-collar crime. I call it black-collar crime. Don't make something blue when it's black.
Emmanuel, in terms of our listening audience, for those who may have some questions or comments, we invite you to come and participate with Missing Pages of History by dialing in at 818-337-0016. And make sure you hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. Hit 1, you have any views or comments. This is Missing Pages of History. The line is now open. Emmanuel, could you give us the different results or behavior, if such, between the creation of all of these commissioners or commissions that they used to investigate police corruption in the beginning, in the past, versus the resources and behavior of the same thing that's going on today? We are developing a lot of commissioners to investigate police corruption, and there seems to be the same thing in terms of police were still not being held accountable. What have you found out in terms of that particular parallel, how the commissions operate at the end resort in the beginning of the history of policing, and how they operate today as commissioners today as relates to investigating the behavior of the police departments?
Well, it's very difficult to say, because each state operates a little bit different. That's why I said that they are police state inside of a state. Inside the country, each state has it on. The southern states act a little bit different than the northern states, basically. They operate a bit different now because during that particular time, no one got sued, no one made payoffs. They rather pay now. When they get sued, they just pay. They don't like to investigate now. That kills investigation when they satisfy the suitcase against them. That's the difference now. They weren't paying off money that particular time in sums like they're doing now. They just had 3 cases where they just paid off millions of dollars to the Gray family in Baltimore, to the young man who was selling loose cigarettes in New York. They pay now. They do that. But the person's life is gone. So for their concern, life is just a dollar bill or dollar bills. The investigation ceases real quick because the DA, the district attorney has a lot to say, and the state's attorney, they elect these people again. And they report basically to the governor to in a certain extent. And they report to that, the local district attorney report to the local. Well, that's all set up. The grand jury is picked a certain way. Everything, it don't reflect the community. It reflects a not guilty verdict, regardless what it is. So everything we're trying, the federal government can only get involved unless it's some other type of crime, a civil rights type thing. So they try to keep it out of that. They don't want to be investigated anymore. But corruption is so widely spread back in that particular time that they had to do something. It was very blatant. It was out in the front of everybody. They really didn't care. Police going and collecting money, come out, count the money right through the door. Who cared? It was totally blatant. And it didn't care who knew it. It was mob bosses buying, basically, mob police chiefs. And I told you how the promotions was done. They gave them the money to buy the promotion. How many guys back in that particular time, police officers, had $15 to pay for a captain? You look around, a guy been there 2 or 3 years, they done bought him, he become a captain. Of course, he had the money to become a captain. It's all about payola. How many people know that? That it was not earned, it was bought. Promotions are bought. And some of those are bought today or through nepotism. Because my father was a police officer, my granddad was one, my family police officers. But police officers, they get paid. Their retirement is outstanding. All you do is go to Florida, go to Arizona, you see where they live and how they live. They get paid. Firemen do too. So these are jobs on the municipal part that we have to go get. Run your city. You're there. You can get the resources. They get the resources. You never know what goes on. But again, if they're on the political take and they're on the fraud and, again, on the bookmaking business, which was huge at a particular time, this is how they got paid. I'm a part of that. I know that. I've seen that. In Baltimore, I saw it like it was just rampant. You knew who everybody was, and you couldn't do nothing about it. Nothing. They ran that. From the judges on down, they ran that. If the money was right, you had no problem. All you had to do was have the currency. And this was a corruption. When they investigated this, you can't stop corruption in 50 states. Federal government can't stop all that. There's too much going on. Everybody was getting a piece of the pie. It continues today. Not as it's rampant, but it continues today also.
And before you close, make a summary, Emmanuel. I noticed there were several cities that had a history of disorganized corruption by the police department in the past. Do these same cities continue the same pattern today? Who was in these cities in the past, and how are they different with the city today as it relates to disorganized corruption to policing in these various communities?
Well, the same cities, I think I named them earlier, but the same cities had the same problems. The Baltimore, the Newark, New Jersey, Detroit, Michigan, Chicago, the L.A., the New Orleans, they had the same problems. They got the same things that happened. They're the ones that shooting people, unarmed people getting away with it. Nothing has changed, but to, again, massive police collaborations and then being exposed to things again, gambling, drugs, prostitution. These are enterprises now. And again, a few more cities has joined the Louisville, the San Francisco, Milwaukee, New Orleans, Indianapolis, Atlanta, Los Angeles, Miami. These cities are still under misconduct, police misconduct. And mainly at Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, they're investigating now basically widespread use of excessive force and racism within the ranks of the department. And one department right now is being investigated for this is, the commission is called, I think it's called the Christopher Commission, and it's investigating LAPD. This is what they're doing now. They've paid out so much money. Been doing it for about 30 years, 40 years. When, of course, you can pay money out to people who that you apply excessive force. So from Rodney King was one of the most elaborate cases out there that people saw excessive force on camera, and they still denied it even on camera. The camera was lying. So again, this is what they do. We see it on camera, and it's still, you find the police officer not guilty. They have five outlets they use all the time, which does not even happen. But these are lies that they use. Self-defense. Against a person running, you shoot them in the back, and that's self-defense. Then you come and plant something by them, and the camera catches all of this. So you drop and stuff everything, and it's still self-defense. Again, we're talking about vigilantes with police uniforms on. We're talking about people who have least amount of qualifications, the least amount. They're operatives, and that's who they get. The nepotism, this is who they make police officers. Not
Emmanuel,
all of them, but most
can we
of them.
Stop you right here, Emmanuel, and give you 2 minutes to do your summarization of part two of policing in the U.S.? You have 2 minutes for your summarization.
Well, again, we're going to look at the end of the 19th century. From this police departments were firmly entrenched and today political affairs of the big city political machines. And we know about those machines. And again, what the police did at that particular time, they provided services and assistance to political allies of the machine and arrested and interfered with the political activities of machine opponents. This was a crime control organization at that particular time. In the 19th century, that's all they were. Main thing they tried to do was basically control crime to organizations. Understand that the primary modality to which crime was organized in the urban areas. They organized it, again, through racketeering, distribution of drugs, gambling, prostitution. We want to be more term with that. You can say writing numbers. Everybody familiar with that one. Horse racing, racketeering, all the doping horses to a certain extent. All this was involved. And they made sure they controlled this. And these are some of the things that basically happened. But again, the primary function of the police department at that particular time was to control gambling, prostitution, drug distribution, and racketeering, etc. And again, it became the dominant political framework of the police department. And again, the same police departments and politicians, and they protected the vice operations. They made sure that these operations were protected through payola. Again, as I repeat myself for one more time and say, was organized police departments and political figures and parties that control the urban areas, because that's where the money was. That's where the organized crime was. And again, they got into the business sector by you paying money to operate your business, or your business will be destroyed, basically.
Emmanuel, we're going to have to stop you right there. We'd like to thank you for giving your analysis and the research that you have done so far on policing, the history of policing in the United States. This is part two of a 4-part series. We'd like to remind our listening audience that we'll be back on October the 3rd as we continue the discussion, policing, the history of policing in the United States. And we'd like to remind you that Saturday, October the 3rd, we will host our third quarterly fundraiser raffle at WCLM, 1450 AM, as well as we have an ongoing T-shirt cap fundraiser. Make sure you purchase one. We tell you go to www.mphinc.org for more information. Until next time, this has been Missing Pages of History, and let us continue to strive to go forward in filling in our missing pages of history. Until next time, we thank you.